AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. This AgriTalk podcast is brought to you by Acuron corn herbicide from Syngenta, which delivers 5 to 15 more bushels an acre than any other herbicide. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Acuron Yield Advantage range is based on 2016 Syngenta and university trials. Government is closed, markets are closed, but AgriTalk is open for business. Let's take advantage of a slow news day to check the weather, get an update from the world of the machinery auctions, and get to know the incoming chairman of the House Ag Committee.
From MLK Junior Monday via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we begin with Machinery Pete, Greg Peterson. Then we'll talk with Representative David Scott, and in the final segment, Zach Johnson. And coming up in just a moment, Michael Clark from BAMWX updates us. I'm Handsome Newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Lorre.
Thank you so much, Davison. Happy Martin Luther King Jr. Day, sir.
Same to you, my brother.
Thank you. Thank you. Yep, markets are closed. Don't know how you want to celebrate MLK Jr. Day, but find a way. Recognize the efforts of the man, the leader of the civil rights movement, and everything that he did for this country. Find a way to recognize that. It's important on a day
Absolutely.
Like today. Yeah.
You know, your initials wouldn't have quite the same ring to it. MLK Jr., that's got a ring. You know,
right.
CTGF, it's just not quite the same.
G.
CTGF.
G.
Chip Tiberius Guadalupe Flory, right?
Oh, isn't that's that, right.
Didn't I have that
about the Guadalupe part in
yes,
there?
Yes. Don't forget.
Yeah.
Don't forget your rich heritage there, brother.
Too funny, Davis. Too funny.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like we mentioned, markets closed, government is closed, and we've got a great opportunity to do some things. We're going to get to know the incoming chairman of the House Ag Committee. We've got Congressman Scott coming up. And at the end of the show, we'll talk with millennial farmer Zach Johnson. So I'm really looking forward to that. Yeah, like Davis and I have been talking about, markets are closed, government is closed. Not a whole lot going on, is there, Davis?
Hardly anything at all, really.
Hardly anything at all. But
unless you've tuned to AgriTalk, in which case you will find a rich wealth of information.
That's right. That's right. And you know what is always going on? The weather. It's
whether you like it or not, Chip.
Whether you like it. Oh, there it is. Michael Clark, BAMWX.com, joins us right now. Michael, how are you, buddy?
I'm doing good. I'm doing good, Chip. How are you?
Good, good, good. Okay, so let's take a look over the at the next 30 days here in the U.S. Are there any pattern changes that you see happening, Michael?
Yeah, you know, so what's really interesting right now is, first and foremost, just really how dry it is. Really dry in the central U.S. and in the Midwest, and you know, I think we're going to be looking at a wetter pattern develop here as we get into the second half of January, and so it's going to be a pattern where, you know, we need the moisture, the soils need the moisture. Some of these soils are really, really dry.
Right.
So I am seeing an overall pattern that the cold air is really going to start coming in pretty fierce for the far, probably northern tier, northern plains into the Pacific Northwest. And then we're going to see the southeastern U.S. warm up a little bit and get what we call the southeast ridge in play. And you know, as well as I do, when that happens, we set that battleground up right in the middle of the country.
Right. You know,
so
if we get that battleground set up, it might not just be a wetter outlook. It could be a wet outlook.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Yeah, the week two forecast, the trends and things right now are certainly for things to be close to 200% of the normal for the second half of the month. So it's definitely a much different pattern. And one thing to consider too, Chip, I think, is there's probably – going to be a couple of pretty big winter storms mixed in with that. I think that the central U.S., you know, could really be looking at a couple of, maybe even just blizzard-like storms. I mean, it's not out of the question that that trend could continue.
Dude, as mild as this winter has been to this point, if we have to wait to the second half of January to get our first big storm, at least in my area, I'm okay with that.
Yeah. You know, this morning I was doing some looking. Winter to date, we are sitting at in a rank since 1953 at the ninth warmest winter on record since 1953. So you're right. It has been warm. And but I do think for the western half of the country, we are going to be changing up the pattern to cold and stormy.
Okay. All right. Well, there's something to look forward to. Michael, take us a little bit deeper into spring. If when you're talking to a row crop producer in Iowa, Illinois, what are you telling them right now as far as their spring preps?
Yeah, I think it's a year where spring can be somewhat active with severe weather chances. Especially early on. And I think it's possible that, there could be some lingering effects of we've had the cooler starts to springs the last couple of years.
Yes, sir.
I think that's a possibility, but I think, it's going to be a very similar outcome to when it gets warm. It's going to get warm very quickly. And I am concerned overall. I'm concerned about the current status of the drought, and I'm concerned about the current sea surface temperature pattern across the entire planet. We have very close matches to some very dry years, and the pattern is behaving similarly to some of those years. And a lot of the model data that has come out recently, the seasonal model data for spring into summer, is dry and warm.
Yeah.
So I think spring can feature its bouts of rain. I don't think it's going to be an excessively wet spring, though. I think that as we kind of round that into summer, the current situation with the drought and what I'm seeing concerns me that there could be issues with the growing season this year. So that's kind of in a nutshell. When we're looking at our analogs and our sea surface temperature patterns, there's definitely some red flags there right now, at least.
Right, right. I want to do this real quick if we can.
Yeah.
Talk to me about those variations in the sea surface temperatures. Are we starting to see some register below normal sea surface temperatures?
Yeah, it's the La Nina's here. We're in a La Nina. You never want to go, shouldn't say never, but when you come from a La Nina and you go into this end zone neutral stage as you get into the growing season, that's always risky, because you really lose a solid pattern driver and things can turn dry and warm pretty quickly. And that's honestly, Chip, that's what happened in 2012.
Yep. That transition period.
And I'm not saying this is 2012. Please don't think I'm saying that, but, I do think that we at least need to be that possible, La Nina to end zone neutral transition in those sea surface temperatures. So we are seeing that potential right now.
Yep. Yep. Well, when we're talking about ENSO, we're always in some sort of movement to La Nina, away from La Nina, in El Nino, away from El Nino. And it's that transition that sometimes generates some of the most unpredictable weather and some of the issues. Buddy, thank you so much. Yep. Appreciate you.
Thank you, Chip. Have a good one.
All right. You too. You too. That's Michael Clark, BAMWX.com. Coming up next, we got Machinery Pete right here on an MLK Junior Day edition of AgriTalk. The 2020 harvest is long over, but managing resistant weeds remains key as we move into 2021. Steve Gumm, corn herbicide product lead with Syngenta, is here today. Steve, how does a lack of weed seed bank management impact a grower's potential yield?
So essentially, deposits are made to the bank from the reserve of weed seeds developed from unmanaged infestations or weed escapes. And once those deposits are made into the ground, seeds can grow and mature into more weeds, creating a cycle that can be really hard to stop. As this happens, fields are at a higher risk for resistance to develop, and herbicide applications become less effective year over year.
Yeah, so you mentioned to me that you have four key ways that growers can keep their weed seed bank accounts low. What are those?
Sure thing. There are four key actions that we always talk about to help growers minimize risks of the weed seed bank building in their fields. These include using full labeled rates of herbicides that optimize coverage and control, apply herbicides before the largest weed in the field reaches 4 inches in height, scout fields for problem areas and identify those weeds. Clean equipment between fields is really important, especially at harvest, to prevent seeds from spreading. It's also important to keep in mind that new herbicide technology should not be treated as a silver bullet for resistant weed management. Instead, new herbicides should be used as an additional tool in an integrated, comprehensive weed management program.
Wow, that is excellent perspective right there. Steve, what's your recommended herbicide that offers the best comprehensive program in corn?
In corn, Acuron herbicide will help fields start clean and protect them from weeds prior to emergence, so you can control weeds now and in the future as a premium resistance management solution. With four active ingredients and three effective sites of action, Acuron is the best herbicide solution for control of resistant weed biotypes with built-in weed resistance management. Remember, Acuron also provides growers 5 to 15 more bushels an acre when applied pre-emergence at a full label rate, in addition to helping prevent increasing that weed seed bank.
Got to keep that weed seed bank low. To find out what an extra 5 to 15 bushels an acre with Acuron corn herbicide could mean for your revenue potential, try Syngenta's online calculator. You can find it at www.findmorebushels.com or talk to your local Syngenta retailer. And remember to always read and follow label instructions. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Acuron yield advantage range is based on 2016 Syngenta and University trials.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Smart Nutrition MAP plus MST. Learn how to boost your soil's performance and maximize ROI with Smart Nutrition MAP plus MST at smartnutritionmst.com.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Got Davis Michelson with me. It is MLK Junior Day. Government's closed, markets are closed, and AgriTalk is on the air, my friend.
Yes, sir. You remember, on this January day, it sort of behooves one sometimes to think of the summertime. Remember how all the farm shows and all the whoozy whatsits and the big brouhahas were all shut down, forcing us to pull the future forward. It's a term I coined during that period of time. I coined it myself.
That's
I came up
brilliant.
With it off the top of my head one day. It seems like it's stuck. I don't know.
Yeah.
But one of the ways we did that here at Farm Journal is Farm Journal Field Days, right?
That's right.
You know, that puppy just keeps on giving. It was a huge, tremendous success, as I recall.
Yes.
But there's more Farm Journal Field Days coming up, featuring our very own machinery, Pete Greg Peterson, as I understand.
Nice.
I've just been handed this. Yeah. Tuesday,
nice.
February 9th. Free.
Excellent.
Free. Still free.
Yep.
FarmJournalFieldDays.com.
You know what makes it really cool?
What's that?
It's free.
It's absolutely free. It doesn't cost anything, is
Not
the thing.
A dime.
Yep.
Not
FarmJournalFieldDays.com. Tuesday,
That's
February
right.
9. Yep.
And honestly, what makes it really cool is the content that is available at FarmJournalFieldDays.com. Yeah. And this is the equipment edition that we're going to be talking about, which means, of course, that Greg Peterson, Machinery Pete, is going to be a really big part of it. Greg, welcome back to AgriTalk. How you doing, man?
Hey, I'm doing well, guys, and appreciate the lead in there on Farm Journal Field Days. I'm looking forward to that Tuesday, February 9th, I think noon. Put it on your calendar, folks, noon central. We'll just be hanging out live within Farm Journal Field Days, kind of taking questions and talking about trends, whatever you want to talk about. So if you got any questions, yeah, that's where I'll be at Tuesday the 9th at noon there. And I'm excited about Farm Journal Field Days continuing to grow. I've been going to farm shows for years, and it always seemed weird for me that after 3 days or 4 days you have to everyone packs up and goes home, and people still want to learn about new products and product demos. So we're excited to bring more of that to you through Farm Journal Field Days. It's fun.
Well, I'm telling you, Greg, like, you know, Davis with his brilliant thought that some of the shutdown, you know, we actually pulled the future forward. And it forced a lot of organizations to incorporate a virtual site. And it's one of those things. It's one of the things that for the last 2-3 years, they've been saying, yeah, we're going to get to it. We're going to get to it. We're going to get to it. Well, 2020 forced it. And here it is. And it's now. And it's had an influence on the way the Farm Journal is delivering information to the users of Farm Journal information. The National Farm Machinery Show, it's been bumped back to the end of March, right?
I think on paper, I mean, they're hopeful.
They're hopeful.
And with the vaccine situation. You know, the whole thing, you guys are right. I mean, this is pulled forward advancements, and it's a pain in the butt sometimes all to do things differently, but it sort of reminds me back to 2009 when it's hard to remember, but that was when social media, at least in the ag world, we weren't right at the front of the line, but when, to me, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter in particular, Instagram came along later, but when they became a real thing. So for me, it was always, I had this weird reaction writing a farm column for now it's been 31 years. And I, you know, every month I sit down and go, okay, well, what's the most topical thing? Ooh, tractor prices are exploding or planters are soft, whatever. And I always felt kind of bad I had to pick one because I knew the need to get the information out was more ongoing. So when social media came along, I was like, oh, cool. We can just, we don't have to stop talking. Let's just keep
fire hose.
Fire hose, right. And not everything is going to interest you, but, you know, it might be an antique sale. It might be a one-year-old combine. Let's just talk. And share data. And so with Farm Journal Field Days, with all these companies, you know, manufacturers needing to get their latest products out in front of people, it shouldn't be limited to, you know, someone traveling across the country for 4 days. And we love our farm. I mean, the humanness of the farm show is awesome. You know, we need that with auctions too. But auction companies have leaned into this change. Farm equipment dealers in a huge way. Farm Journal is doing everything we can to keep you guys informed. So it's a lot of change in the last year.
And obviously it has spilled over into the equipment auctions with so much of the business done online now. We've talked about that. So let's look at the last week or so here, Greg. Have you picked one? Like you said, you hated to do, but pick one and let's go with the pick of the week.
Well, I got two good examples right on the topic we're talking about, online farm auction. So for pick of the week, let's go to, forgive me, I hope I'm pronouncing this correct, Corunna, Michigan, last Wednesday night. Now, again, it was an online auction. It was a farm sale for Richard Wright, but an online auction. So it's in the evening, which we're seeing more of these sales happen. And they're doing very well. Now, this one was by Sheridan Realty and Auction Company. Beautiful equipment. And if I had to pick one piece for the pick of the week, probably be the 1983 Case 2390. It had, it was a one owner. Let me see if I can get the hours on it. It had 3,261 hours, and it brought 18.7, which that is the fourth. It's actually the highest auction price in almost 8 years and the fourth highest ever that I've seen. I actually saw one in Edinburgh, Illinois, back on March 21st of 09, back at that time when the market was on fire. An 84 model, 2,200 hours, went for 32. That's still the record holder. But 18.7 was pretty strong there last Wednesday up in Michigan.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. All right. Anything else at that Michigan sale that really caught your eye?
Yeah, a couple other tractors. Okay. It was an 05 John Deere 7520, kind of that loader, larger tractor loader size. Now, this one sold without a loader, 1,500 hours, but it brought 78.1, which is the second highest auction price in 7 years on a John Deere 7520 with no loader. And it did make me go back to, because the record holder on a 7520 with no loader was a 03 model with 701 hours. That we actually filmed. It was back in April April 11th of 14 in Lowry, Minnesota, brought 91,000. Farm retirement auction for James Anderson. And when I bump into our friend, the millennial farmer, Zach Johnson, of course, he's from Lowry, Minnesota, right where I grew up. And we got laughing. He goes, Pete, you know, I think I was at that sale. And that was years before Zach, you know, rocketed into fame as millennial farmer. But folks out there in Lowry, a lot of good people. So,
Very cool. Hey, just so, to remind everybody, we got Zach coming up at the end of the show today. So it'll be a lot of fun. Yeah, very
ask
good.
Ask him if
very
he remembers. You'll have to ask him about that machinery pizza sale in Lowry back in April of 14.
Very good. All right. Hey, we've been doing so much looking back, okay, about this transition in power and the peaceful, hopefully, peaceful transition of power.
Yeah.
Is there anything that we need to be watching out for at the start of a new administration in the used machinery markets?
Well, I think the tax issues and potentially what could change, obviously, is sort of top of mind. And then, you know, it's difficult to predict what's going to happen. But, you know, folks, farmers are very smart, and they like to be proactive rather than get caught behind a changing trend. So, you know, definitely there I can sense that there's some sensitivity. And it seemed to me as 2020 closed, it may be pushed forward some equipment buying decisions, whether new or used. Now, of course, end of 20 was, you know, commodity prices are strong and, you know, things were looking up. And obviously I've been reporting auction prices on good used have been hot. But I did find it interesting, Chip, that, you know, we've had such turmoil here, you know, since the election in November. But from a data point perspective, you know, the pricing just got stronger. Obviously, a lot of different issues there. But it did remind me back in 16, I remember that was also a tumultuous election, obviously. And I remember there was a definite bounce in the literally days right after that election. And I think it was so unexpected that, and again, there people maybe were starting to extrapolate forward, ooh, tax policy, whatever. But
right,
it's interesting the mix that politics can have even into the used machinery market sometimes.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Something that we're going to watch real closely. Okay. Hey, just a reminder to everybody what we talked about at the start of the segment here with Greg Peterson. We've got the Farm Journal Field Days Equipment Edition coming up on Tuesday, February 9th. You can register for free at farmjournalfielddays.com. They're going to kick it off at 8 o'clock in the morning, but at noon, I think it's noon Central Time, there's going to be the live chat in the networking lounge with Machinery Pete. He's going to be there to answer your questions. So, Greg, good stuff. Thanks, buddy. We'll talk to you later.
Hey, sounds great, guys.
All right. That is Greg Peterson, Machinery Pete. You got to come back right here on AgriTalk because next we've got the new chairman of the House Ag Committee, Congressman David Scott.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Good morning, AgriTalk listeners. This is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady with your Markets Now update. Markets and government offices are closed today for Martin Luther King Jr. Day. Grain markets will reopen with the overnight session tonight. Livestock markets will reopen at 8:30 Central Time on Tuesday morning. Much of grain traders' focus coming out of the long holiday weekend will remain the same as it has been. In South America, traders will focus on weather and impacts to crops. Forecast signal conditions in Brazil will remain favorable for the coming 2 weeks. Hot and dry weather is expected to return in Argentina. Last week's rains will temporarily ease stress, but more rains will be needed later this month and in February. Another focus will be export demand, specifically from China. The export window for U.S. soybeans is already extended due to a later than normal start to Brazil's harvest, and now there's the threat of a trucker strike in the country early next month. For corn, much of the export attention is on shipments, with a huge amount of unshipped sales on the books for the 2020-2021 marketing year. In the livestock markets, cash trade will take center stage. The drop in cash cattle prices last week pressured futures. Traders will want to see signs of the cash market strengthening before they return as active buyers. That's probably going to take extended strength in the box beef market. Hog traders are also waiting on the cash hog market to start strengthening seasonally. Until then, there's risk of traders removing more of the futures premium to the cash index. Another focal point for livestock traders is rising feed costs amid surging corn and soybean meal prices. For Markets Now, I'm Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
Anybody here seen my old friend Martin? Can you tell me where he's gone?
He Welcome back to AgriTalk. The markets are closed today. It is Martin Luther King Jr. Day, and we've got a real treat. We've got our first conversation with new chairman of the House Ag Committee. That is Congressman David Scott. He's representing the 13th District of Georgia. Congressman Scott, what are you into? Your 10th?
I'm into my 18th year in Congress. And, of course, that's 18 years on the House Agriculture Committee.
Right.
And so it is an historic occasion, and it is so significant that you are interviewing me on Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday.
Yeah.
Because if it weren't for Martin Luther King, I wouldn't be here. I wouldn't be the first African American to serve on the agriculture. And Dr. King had a saying. He said, one day the hands that pick cotton will be able to pick members of Congress, presidents of the United States. Well, I know Dr. King is up there in heaven looking down on me, because now we have the first African-American chairman of the House Agriculture Committee whose hands picked cotton. I picked the cotton, cropped the tobacco, milked the cows, plowed the fields on my grandparents' farm. You know, the good Lord prepares you for things. So it is an honor for me to be in this position, because there is no industry, no area of work that African Americans have not made their mark in, like agriculture. Right. That we were the pioneer farmers. We're the ones that did the heavy lifting on agriculture. So it's with great pride that I stand here on Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday and say to God Almighty, thank you for sending Martin Luther King Jr. our way.
Outstanding. Outstanding. Let's talk about the House Ag Committee in the upcoming session here. What do we need to know? What's going to be the focus of your committee?
The focus of my committee is to make sure that we have the best, strongest, most impactful agriculture system in the world. We've got to protect what we have. And then we have to quickly look and examine several key major issues quickly. First of all, food security. We've got to make sure that we deal with this issue of climate change. We are experiencing some extraordinarily and dynamic changes in weather patterns and so forth. Nobody suffers from climate change like our farmers. It is the food we eat, the clothes we wear, our shelter. It is our most important industry. And so I want to, and we're already putting together a hearing on that. We are the ones that have to deal with carbon sequestration to be able to make sure that our soils are protected and enriched. we need to find out why are we having all these fires? For goodness sakes, we have fires going for weeks and months. They're not just burning up valuable foliage and trees and so forth, but livestock, animals are being done. So we can get our hands around this. Secondly, we've got to address this issue of making sure that everybody is treated fairly in agriculture. As I mentioned, nobody's paid their dues in agriculture like African Americans. We were here throughout slavery. It was the African Americans who tilled the soil, who were out there. And right now, there are elements of discrimination to them. We got to find out what that is, where that is, and make sure that everybody has glorious opportunities to take advantage and participate in this wondrous world of agriculture and farming. We need to also make sure beginning farmers are there. It's one thing to say we're going to help beginning farmers, but when I tell people, well, you don't know, you can, a beginning lawyer, all they got to do is throw their shingle out there on the wall. They're in business. But for the farmer, he's got to get land. And an acre of land right now is averaging at about $6,000. Some places higher than that. So we're going to have our credit people. Farm Credit has been a wonderful partner of mine for a long time. The other thing is we got to make sure that that scholarship program put into the Farm Bill for our 1890s African American land grant, colleges, universities is moving. We're going to bring those college presidents back in so they can share with our committee all the glorious things that they are doing in terms of helping young people get into agriculture. Cool. And then finally, the last thing, food security, particularly our food banks, to make sure that we are having enough food. What are the greatest threats? So we're going to jump off the bat. We're already putting together hearings on climate change, the status of the black farmers, and food security to make sure we have food enough to go around and make sure that we meet all those challenges.
Gotcha. Okay, that's an aggressive list of priorities there. I've got to ask you, as you're talking about the climate change and some of the legislation surrounding that, in the Midwest, there's a heavy focus on crop insurance and making sure that crop insurance is maintained in the Farm Bill.
Absolutely.
What's your take on the status of crop insurance? Does it work?
Yes, it works. We have been at the forefront of making sure that any snags in it that we can eliminate. I've worked closely with Chairman Peterson on that, and he is sort of, as you know, for 18 years, he's been my mentor and has taken me under his wing, and I've worked closely with him to make sure crop insurance is maintained at the level that we need it. And as you well know, agriculture industry is so diversified. We have different farms of different sizes that have various different needs for insurance to cover them.
Yep.
So
right.
We need, it's not a one size fits all, but crop insurance is a big agenda item for me. I want to make sure that it is working at all levels for all sizes and for the different types of farms. So you can best assure that David Scott will be at the front of the spear dealing with crop insurance. Because without that insurance, we got no crops.
Yeah. Excellent. I wanted to talk a little bit about what agriculture might expect from a COVID stimulus bill from the new Biden administration. Might there be any new initiatives for agriculture in that bill?
I really cannot answer that question thoroughly enough because I have not had time to sit down with the administration. As you know, we've been wrestling with so many other issues up here.
Yep.
But you can rest assured that I will be working very cohesively with the administration. Bill Sack and I are friends. We work together over a long period of time, as you know, 8 years in the Obama administration. And, man, he's very knowledgeable. And so I will be working in a cohesively way to make sure that we're all on the same page. There's one other thing I want to say to you before I leave, and that is this. We have a legacy of this being the most bipartisan committee in Congress. Why do I say that? Because we got to do this together. And that is how I've gotten all my work done. I've worked very well. Mike Conan Way and I worked so closely. That's how I got that $80 million for the African American schools. That's how we're going to bring justice to black farmers and come up with the kinds of policies that we have. It will be Democrats and Republicans working together on this House Agriculture Committee under David Scott's leadership.
Excellent. All right. Congressman, thank you so much for your time this morning. Really appreciate it, and I'm looking forward to our next conversation.
Well, I am too, and I want you to know that charge of staying in touch goes both ways. Thank you very much.
Excellent. Thank you so much. That is the new chairman of the House Ag Committee, Congressman David Scott from Georgia. We'll be back. Conversation with Millennial Farmer next, right here on AgriTalk.
It starts with a plan. That's why America's Conservation Ag Movement is inviting you to get your farm business ready for 2021 with a free resource stewardship planning guide. Get your free guide today at agweb.com/ACAM.
Welcome back to AgriTalk on this Martin Luther King Jr. Day. Thank you so much for joining us, making time for AgriTalk. What a great conversation there with Congressman, with Chairman Scott, Congressman Scott from Georgia. Looking forward to many more conversations with him and keeping tabs of what he's got planned at the House Ag Committee. Joining us right now is Zach Johnson. He is Millennial Farmer at Farm Millennial on Twitter and podcast host out there on YouTube. Zach, welcome to AgriTalk, man. How you doing?
I'm doing good, Chip. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Glad that you could make time for us here. Tell us about the pod. You've got two podcasts on YouTube, right?
Well, we've got two podcasts that we do. The first one is Fieldwork. We do that with Minnesota Public Radio, and it's really based around conservation-minded management practices on the farm. We often talk about like what works and what doesn't. We talk to guys that are doing things like no-till and cover crops and really just try to hit a lot of the management practices when it comes to the different ways to farm. The second one is called Off the Husk, a much more casual. We actually, my wife and myself and my buddy Randy, we do that one right in the basement of our house.
Nice. What do you talk about on Off the Husk?
Pretty much anything and everything. It doesn't even have to do with farming. We like to say often that Off the Husk goes off the rails. It's completely different from the YouTube channel and totally different from the Fieldwork podcast. And we really just sit down and crack a couple of cold ones, and whatever goes on for the next hour is what we got.
Beautiful. Love it. Love it. Another thing that I love, Zach, and this is the reason that I wanted to get you on and hear the story about this. I am so impressed. You saw a need among the rural fire departments out there for some new equipment. You saw the need, you took it on, and you're helping so many fire departments out there gear up for some grain bin accidents, right?
Yeah, it's been crazy, I guess, just to kind of highlight what we did or to hit the cliff notes on it. My wife and I talked a little bit about making a donation, some sort of donation towards a local volunteer fire department. And the idea was to get them the rescue equipment that they need for when a farmer gets stuck in an unfortunate situation in a grain bin. Right. And we started looking at it, and we were looking at making a pretty large donation, but we got to looking and thought, you know, we can't help out too many departments because the dollar value gets so high so quickly. And we kind of put it out there that we were going to make a donation and find a department or two. And my wife had the idea that, you know, she noticed that other people wanted to join in and help out. And so she started a GoFundMe account. We did a GoFundMe campaign throughout harvest, and I just mentioned it on a few of my videos. And it was like overnight we had $20,000 in this GoFundMe account. Jeez. Of viewers of ours that wanted to help out and give back and provide the rescue equipment and the training for these rural volunteer departments. And by the time it was all said and done, we've now given out over $60,000, and we've still got money that's coming in that we're going to continue to give out because we had over 200 requests for this. And we actually wrote 51 checks last week to 51 different departments in 13 different states. We've heard back from a ton of them saying thank you, and here's what we bought, or here's what we're buying, or we've lined up training for 2 weeks from now. And it just snowballed into something I never expected.
Okay, first thing, if we want to make a donation to the effort, where do we go? How do we find it?
You know, so right now, for the time being, the GoFundMe link is closed. It got so much bigger than we expected that we realized we've got to get some ducks in a row on our end before we continue this. And so we're getting our ducks in a row right now, and we plan on opening that GoFundMe link back up. But the link is in the description of most of our YouTube videos from the last couple of months. Gotcha. So that GoFundMe link, especially harvest videos, they all have that link in it. And that should be open up here in the next couple of weeks.
Okay, great, great. How do you find the fire departments that are going to be recipients of some of these funds?
It was all nominations that got emailed to us. We set up a separate email to send us the nominations, and we went through and kind of filtered through the nominations and, you know, what made sense and who gave us clear information so that we could contact them and know what it's going towards. And then, to be totally honest with you, we didn't know exactly how to go about it. We didn't have enough money to fund everyone. So we literally threw everybody's name in a bucket and we drew out of it live. Yep. We live streamed on YouTube as we were drawing the names out. And we raised another $11,000 on that live stream alone. The money kept coming in and we just kept pulling departments out.
That's outstanding. How much? How much does each department get?
Well, it kind of depends on what they were requesting. We put a cap on it at $1,750 because we kind of averaged out what most people were requesting. And then we split it in half. So a lot of the guys that were requesting $3,500, we gave them half. And we found out there's a lot of programs out there that'll kick in for the other half if they can get the first half.
Right, right. That's fantastic. Fantastic. So I don't know where I want. Why? Why did you do this?
Well, you know, I've been so fortunate. We've been so lucky to have our platform take off the way that we have. And agriculture is obviously my passion. That's the reason I started the platform, the reason I do the Millennial Farmer. We realize now that we're at the point with our platform that we can make a difference and we can give back to the industry that we love and has given us so much. And so we really started doing that last year. We gave back quite a bit to several different things, but this whole grain bin rescue thing involving the viewers in what we do is where it really took off. And I guess really just to try to give back to the industry that we're passionate about.
Zach Johnson, that's a great story. I'm inspired by it. I think everybody should be inspired by this. You got to get on Twitter. It's at Farm Millennial. He's the Millennial Farmer, Zach Johnson. Thank you so much, man. We'll talk to you later.
Hey, thanks, Chip. I appreciate it.
All right. Fantastic stuff right there from Zach. That is really cool what they are doing to help out some of the fire stations out there, the rural fire departments. Be prepared for what has become too common of a problem. The number one way to prevent those grain bin accidents is to stay out of them. But I know there are times when you've got to get in there. Just be as safe as you possibly can and help Zach out. Help Zach help other fire departments be prepared for just that. Thank you so much for listening today. Really appreciate that. Hey, come back tomorrow, because tomorrow morning, guys, we're going to have a conversation with Lance Honig, the head of NASS at USDA, right here on AgriTalk. Thanks to Acuron Corn Herbicide for sponsoring the AgriTalk podcast. Talk to your retailer about how you can get 5 to 15 more bushels with Acuron. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Acuron Yield Advantage range is based on 2016 Syngenta and University trials.